O Lord, you have inspired me to live simply as a child, a seeker after you. You who art all in all will surely look after my needs. I leave the past behind, cutting tethers of attachment to each memory dream. I look not to the future. It is you who will write those chapters through this form. I know only now. I know only your presence creeping inside me, glowing within me. When I let go of my will and make it thy will, I travel the sure path to you. You, O my Lord, are my heart and my love I feel. Your signature is on my thoughts. I do all for you. I have sold myself into slavery to you in order that I might do all for you. I do not know outcomes. That is all up to you. I do not know the means by which anything is done. Again, that is all up to you. I only know you, your presence, your love, your wisdom, guided thoughts. All flows from you, through you, and back to you again. Therefore, nothing is gained or lost, and the joy of your presence and being in your expression is the only reality. O my Lord, my God, I pray but one thing. Keep me in humble submission to your will. All my love, my thoughts, my life, I offer at your feet. And from the Gospel of Swami Ramdas, Papa said, when you sit in meditation, do so with the spirit of complete surrender to him. Say, O God, I am nothing. I can do nothing by myself. You are everything. If you surrender to him, he will break all your fetters and liberate you. Offer to God both Dharma and Adharma, both good and evil, virtue and vice. By offering these Devandas, or pairs of offices, at the feet of the Lord, you will go beyond them and become perfect. When shall I be free? Only when I ceases to be. That is, when the ego disappears. Total disappearance of the ego is possible only when your surrender to God is complete. But doubt harasses you. This cloud of doubt can be dispelled only when you go beyond the pairs of opposites. To remove the ego, that is ignorance, knowledge is necessary. Finally, this knowledge also has to be transcended. Then alone you attain God in all his aspects. Because one who has knowledge has ignorance also. That is why you are asked to go beyond both knowledge and ignorance. Removal of ignorance by knowledge is just like the removal of a thorn from your foot by another thorn. Both thorns have to be thrown away finally. In truth, there is no such thing as ego. There is only the ego sense, that is to say, the false consciousness, which makes you feel I am separate from God. Actually, you are not separate. The ego has no reality. It is purely illusory. It is really this false sense of ignorance that makes you think you are separate from God. You are ever one with God. This is the truth of your existence. Swami Krishnananda asking, when I am struggling hard, weeping and lamenting, the mind is greatly distressed. You now give me some hope. Now I understand the virtue of a guru in spiritual life. Papa, the moment you know that you have got a guru, you should feel your salvation is achieved. There is no more birth for you. For guru is he who dispels darkness and brings light. He is the giver of moksha. Even the avatars of God cannot give moksha to anyone. If they want to do so, they should come in their form of guru. Guru alone can give you liberation. He is in this sense greater than God. There cannot be any doubt in your mind when you have accepted a guru, realizing that he is omnipotent and infinite power that can save you. You have to be aware of this. When you have accepted omnipotent power as your guru, where is room for doubt or egotistic struggles on your part? Swami Krishnananda, Papa, I have accepted you as my guru. Still, I do not feel I am liberated. I do not know what are the signs of a liberated man. Papa, If you have really accepted a guru, you won't say like this. So your acceptance is not yet real. You have not really understood your guru. His grace flows to you, but you have closed the door and do not allow it to enter. He has accepted you, but you have not accepted him. As soon as you get a guru, feel you are saved. When a child knows it's under the protection of its mother, will it be afraid of anything? It feels secure under the mother's protection. But when it is away from the mother, or even when it is near its mother, but not aware of her presence, it will be afraid of anything and everything. If you feel the guru's protection is not on you, it means you have not found or accepted the guru. There is a song in Marathi, which means, God has shown me the path. He has now made me a faker. He has destroyed my ego sense. He has subdued all my passions. He has given me utter freedom. Swami Krishnananda pointed to one of the women devotees who had come with him, said, Papa, this mother is worrying for nothing at all. Papa, it is not she alone who is worrying for nothing at all. All of you are in the same boat. You do not want to give up worries. If you have no worry at all, why do you feel it the necessity of coming to Anandashram and meeting Ram Dass? You only have to sit and laugh. To this, most of the devotees present agreed and said yes, looking at Papa with amazement. Swami Krishnananda, these people simply say yes, Papa, because they do not want to worry, all laughed. Swami Krishnananda, what I am now is only what the Guru has made me. Papa, then why should you have any worry at all? Say, I have become what he wanted me to become. I am entirely in his hands. Some people say, he makes me worry so. That cannot be true, because God is bliss. He is Sat Chit Ananda. From him no misery ever comes. Does the sun ever give darkness? Where God is, misery is not. He gives us only pure bliss. Swami Krishnananda, I cannot argue. Papa should know my difficulties and guide me properly. Papa, Ram Dass understands your difficulties. He is now telling you the way to get over them. When you know that you do not know anything, then you know everything. Swami Krishnananda, Papa, I feel I am being lifted by my guru step by step. Still I am discontented. Why should it be so? Papa, those who drink the nectar of divine love are never satisfied until they are lost in a sea of bliss. They go on drinking and drinking, but never feel satisfied. When is the individual satisfied? When he is not there at all, that is when he is totally merged in the universal consciousness. You first long and long for God. You approach him and have contact with him. Still, you are discontented. When you have become completely one with him, then alone all is well with you, and you have no more discontentment. You become one with God by intense longing. You should think of and meditate on him so deeply that sense of separation from him completely disappears. Then alone you are really free and happy. Dr. Alva asked Papa about selfless work, that is, nishkama, karma, and inquired if that type of work was possible only for sannyasins. Papa, are all sannyasins detached? By simply putting on the guru cloth, one does not become detached. Completely detached work is possible only when you have realized God. Who is a happy man? He who is a devotee of God. A devotee of God is one who ceaselessly remembers him who is happiness itself. When a man forgets him and spends his time in worldly engagements, how can he be happy? Dr. Alva, so it is not possible for such a devotee to do worldly work. Papa, what is our work? Our only work here is to seek God or do such work that will enable us to realize God. Worldly work is which makes you forget God. a work in which you have no thought of God at all. How can such a work help you in any way to attain God? Dr. Alva, then what about karma yoga? Papa, doing karma in a state of yoga, that is, doing actions in union with God, that is karma yoga. When you are constantly in tune with God and do your work as His servant, you are a karma yogi. Lord Krishna said to Arjuna, O Arjuna, whatever you do, do it for my sake, as an offering to me. Such an action done for God, or as an offering to Him, is selfless action. That will not allow you to sink into the whirlpool of life. People who work with attachment and die with desires unfulfilled are born again and again, and are not free from the cycle of births and deaths. Do not think that the world will not go on without your work. God has engaged you in work only as His agent. If you are taken away, He will find someone else for that work. The master of a house thinks that the whole responsibility of looking after his wife and children and other relations is on his shoulders. He also thinks that if he does not work, the whole family will suffer. What happens when a general famine comes? There is no foodstuff available anywhere. The result is that the whole family starves, including the master of the house. The master who had thought that he was responsible for feeding them cannot do anything now. Truly, there is only one great master, namely God, who looks after all of us. We are only His instruments here. So let us surrender ourselves to Him. A lady devotee asked Papa if God could be worshipped as Mother by repeating Ram Mantra. Papa, God can be worshipped as Mother, as Father. In fact, the mantra stands for both aspects. You may worship Shiva and Shakti, the one who has become both, namely Parama Shiva, Purusha and Prakriti, and also the one who has become both, the Purushamata. He's speaking here of the female and male aspects of God, and that which is beyond both or incorporates both. Ram Dass worshipped God as Mother and Master, taking for himself the position of a child and that of a servant. If you look upon him as Mother, your attitude will be that as a child. Sri Ramakrishna maintained this relationship with God. You can worship God as Mother, Father, Friend, or Master. Mataji used to address Ram Dass as Guru Mavuli, meaning Guru Mother. She accepted Ram Dass in the mother aspect. There is no sweeter relationship between God and the devotee than that of mother and child. It is the most blissful relationship. When Ram Dass serves anybody, he takes the attitude of a servant of God. As a child, he receives protection from God as Mother and remains cheerful always. It is in the attitude of a servant that Ram Dass is conducting the activities of the ashram. Mataji is often asking him, why do you keep up the servant attitude? Have only the attitude of a child. For the helpless child, surrender is the only way. Say to God, O Mother, I am your child. Show me whatever you wish to. Take me anywhere you like. I am entirely in your hands. Then she does everything for you. Swami Krishnananda, once we tasted the sweetness of nectar, we are anxious to have it always. I remember Papa's words, God is preparing you to receive the nectar of Ananda, that is, bliss of God. If you get it without proper preparation to stand it, your body and mind will be shattered to pieces. Papa, so he is gradually preparing you, and when he knows you are ready to receive him, he comes to you in all his glory. Swami Krishnananda, why then should we be impatient? Papa, longing for him means remembrance of him. Remembrance means purification of the mind. The pain of separation from him is definitely better than the pain you get from the world. Cry for God and God alone. Cry we must. Then why cry for worldly things? Swami Krishnananda, there are many intervals and breaks. Papa. That is also good. You can feel the contrast. Gradually, the intervals of separation will be lessened until at last they disappear altogether, and then you will experience a continuous flow of divine consciousness. Drink and drink the nectar of bliss until you become one with it. In the evening, Papa attended the various programs arranged in the Undayag Shala for 2 hours in connection with Mataji's birthday celebration. In the ashram in the evening, there is bhajan and pradakshina round the lamp by men and women devotees separately. When men were going around the lamp, Papa also got up and joined them for a few minutes. It was a thrilling scene. There's a lot in those words, and there's a tremendous teaching there. I think that to attain to God, we need to make it personal and relevant for ourselves in some way, and that's different for each and every one of us. Some are occasionally put off by the word God or the concept, and this is too bad. I think it's because of what religion has done in this, particularly in the West. It seems that any time that a great God-man or avatar comes to the earth, such as Jesus or Buddha or Krishna, there are those who follow after, and because their understanding is imperfect of the Master's teachings, they seek to make an organization around those teachings, and then they seek to codify those teachings in a particular way. Gradually, what comes, it seems in almost every case, is the teaching that this one was the one and only avatar of God, the one and only expression of God, and the only way to achieve perfection is, in fact, perfection is not even achievable, but rather the only way to achieve salvation is to go through that organization or that church or that particular set of teachings. And so ignorance begins to create separation after separation in the one consciousness. And what before had been a perfect expression of the one pure aspect of universal consciousness becomes separated into so many different avenues, each one claiming their sole right to divine perfection. And so wars are sometimes started in the name of God, in the name of these prophets, in the name of these avatars, and without any due cause, for none of them preached any form of hatred or anger or animosity. They stood for truth. They stood for love. And most of all, they stood for that mankind might regain their oneness with the one infinite consciousness, which is the source of us all, only we have forgotten that. So all these divisions that come about as religions, and each one clamoring that they're the one and the only, is the furthest thing from what these great individuals in God have taught. Now some use the word God, some use the word avatar, Krishna, some use the word nirvana and enlightenment. They are all referring to the same highest state of consciousness. There are some who occasionally talk to me and say, well, why don't you use some other word other than God? I think it is because that in the English language, true enough, it is like a lightning rod for people's reactions because of much of the damage that has happened down through the ages. But it still stands for the highest concept of what individuals are capable of. It is still the universal aspect of that consciousness. And in a way, it is just a word. But in another way, it has been charged with the devotion of those down through millennia. However, that has become a mixed message in these days, because there are a lot of overlays of human thought upon that one universal consciousness. In the ancient Judaic religion, it was said that God is nameless. They had a word that somewhat resembled Yahweh, and yet no one was allowed to be able to say it because the name of God was unsayable. We can use a word to designate what God is, but there is no symbol, and there is certainly no word, and there is certainly no thought that can encompass the universal consciousness from which we have all evolved. If I were to ask you to think of infinity and create an image in your mind of that greatest thought, what is infinity? And once you had formed that thought in your mind, then I told you to break the barriers of that thought and go beyond that even. You can see how impossible it is for the mind to conceive of infinity. And yet we are told by mystics from all religions and from all ages that that is exactly what this universal consciousness is. And so our puny minds, in a human sense, cannot even begin to grasp what this universal consciousness is about. In order to begin to experience it in our own lives, we have to go beyond the mind. The mind always entertains limitations. You cannot think a thought without forming an idea of a person or a place or an image. Even when I ask you to come up with an idea of infinity, you had to come up with an idea, a form of some kind of what that infinity looked like. It could be a vast dark space. It could be something that defies any kind of material creation, but nevertheless it has some form within your own consciousness. When you set aside this mind and through meditation enter into the divine mind, then you can have direct experience of that divine consciousness. And because of that, you lose all the fetters of this human limitation. You lose all consciousness of this body. You may be aware that you have a body and some distant relationship to it, but in that universal consciousness, you feel yourself expanded far beyond that. And words start to come to be just a lost thing when you try to describe it, because every word is but a symbol that represents some concept, some idea, some form. And because you go beyond the form into the formlessness, no word can adequately describe it. So in one way of speaking, it does no good to speak about these subjects because you cannot know it through words. But what words can do is begin to point the direction in which we should focus our mind. In truth, we cannot ever discuss these subjects in their totality, but they can only be pointers towards the truth, but they cannot contain truth itself. So your own individual experience of truth can only be yours within the privacy of your own soul. And when you come back into material consciousness, you may try to put it into words through poetry, through song, through verse of some kind, are the most common expressions. And yet, there is no adequate way to truly convey what that experience has been for you. So, it does no good just simply to listen to words describing that truth. But what really needs to happen is for us to experience it, for us to become that. Because it is not just a matter of you thinking a thought and then saying, oh, this is what's true. But rather you become that thought. You become the totality of that thought. And every part of your being resonates with the truth of it. And when that happens, then you know you are truly on the spiritual path. As long as this path is just something of conjecture, something of an idea, then you have not truly entered onto the spiritual path. I had somebody who approached me the other day who was a retired minister for the Unitarian Church. And he wanted to engage me in a philosophical discussion around whether Jesus had been resurrected or not. And he says, I don't think so. Well, he was merely dwelling on a mental concept of it all, without understanding the inner truth of it. Fortunately, God saved me a dry conversation of an intellectual type and called him away. I used to get engaged in these kind of intellectual discussions and had a certain enjoyment of it. But any longer, those things don't tempt me so much. They don't interest me very much. Because I am interested in discovering the truth within myself and discussing with others truths that they have discovered within their own selves or their own desire to discover the truth within themselves. And pure mental dialogue around this will not get us there. It is a time waster. And more often than not, people get their feelings hurt or a greater misunderstanding occurs. And so these things don't lend themselves well to just pure mental diatribes. But if we focus our attention upon those inner centers, either our heart center or the third eye or the crown chakra, and most generally on the heart center or on the third eye point, and we still the breath, we go into the quietness of our own being. Now, these thoughts do not easily get tamed. It's a little bit like if you were having a small child and you were wanting them to do some kind of task, perhaps clean their room. What oftentimes happens for parents is you feel as if it's easier just to do it yourself than it is to train that child, because they become obstinate, they don't want to do it, they lie down and they cry, or they go and often sulk someplace and do anything but the thing you're asking them to do. Well, the mind is very much like this when we try to tame it. You know, it just gets carried away with itself. And if anything, we become more restless. We become more fearful. We become more anxious about things when we try to sit down and meditate, because the very fact of trying to tame the mind just incites it into a riot. But if we can be persistent and consistent and gradually bring our mind under the sway of that discipline that we call meditation, that begins with concentration, then we enter into a state of stillness, a state of peace. And when that stillness comes over us, we should not be anxious then for anything to happen, but rather we should just enter into that state of stillness, and we should think within ourselves, God, highest concept of universal consciousness, bring to me your very self. Open my mind towards the divine mind. Let me let go of all things of the small consciousness, that I might expand into the greater consciousness. And once having said that prayer, then leave it alone and just stay in that stillness. Let the divine current come within you, and that will lift you up. It will put you through the transformation that is necessary in order for you to realize the higher consciousness. You cannot do it. What would you know to do? This body, these feelings, this mind has to go through a complete transformation. And what would you know the first step in doing that? We cannot do it. We cannot even make our own heartbeat, much less go through this great transformational process. So this divine consciousness within you knows exactly what to do. And when it's activated, it comes into your being and it begins to put you through that transformation. And it starts from the bottom up. It starts from the base of your spine and gradually works up step by step, taking you through every experience that's necessary. Now, in order to get through these experiences in the quickest and the safest and most efficacious way possible, we should simply put our mind on God alone, that highest concept, to sing to God, to serve God in everybody we meet, to love God in everybody we meet. And if we do this, we will draw ourselves straightway towards that highest consciousness. But there are many temptations that come along. Just as soon as you enter into this path, then this base energy at the base of your spine rises up. And the first thing that happens in the New Testament language is Herod gets activated. Now, Herod is the sexual passions. And when you start getting lifted up in consciousness, you are tempted to bring this high conscious energy back down into the passions. Now, it is during this time that you should withhold yourself from the passions and seek with everything you have to lift this consciousness ever higher. Then comes different desires to attain power. Perhaps in this world, you begin to understand that this consciousness has terrific power to influence people and circumstances around you. And so this temptation is described in Jesus going out to the desert and being lifted up high by Satan, say, I will offer you to the world if you will get down and be submissive to me. This is symbolic language for when we're lifted up in this higher consciousness and we're aware that we have attained some powers, or what are called in India, siddhis. And we have the power to make things happen. We have the power to influence things. We even have the power to perform what might be called miracles. But these things are obstacles to that person, that one who is having their eyes set on the highest consciousness. One thing must be said here. If you move into that realm, you become subject to the laws of that realm. So if you move into the realm of mystical miracles and all the rest of it, you are subject to the law of karma that's accrued by that. And that law can be higher penalty than anything you could get for being on just the material realm itself. So we read many books about those who get involved in astral realms, in the realms of developing powers and siddhis in this world. And you don't see them escaping it. You don't see them going beyond it. But they just get further and further entangled in it. I think the books of Carlos Castaneda are a great example of this, where he just stays in that realm and is constantly under the influence of different individuals and entities that share that realm with him. He has become relegated to it and all the laws and powers that go along with it. But this is a very limited part of consciousness, and really you're just trading one state of ignorance for another. And so this is something to be strictly avoided, but it is very tempting when it comes along because it empowers you as an individual, and therefore the ego loves it. So you can really have your hands full rejecting and pushing away these things. But if you're successful in doing that, you rise into higher realms still, and you feel the bliss and the power of God within you. Now this brings its own realm of temptation with it. When you feel this bliss lifting you up in such great degree, there is a word for it in India called bhava, B-H-A-V-A. And it is a lower realm of intoxication. And you can get totally caught up in this lower realm of intoxication. So you even have to let go of that and not be attached to this feeling of intoxication in the spirit on that realm. And if you do that, then you move into the final realm. And that is a realm where you feel enlightened. And it is true You are feeling the truth within your own being. However, this level of wisdom, this level of truth, still has one who recognizes and experiences the truth and the truth. So there is still this level of duality to it. And in order to attain the highest consciousness, you have to let go of even that until you come to the point where there is the sense of I and there is the sense of thou. And there is still this thin, thin veil between the devotee and God, or universal consciousness. And when you get to that point, then you totally surrender yourself, heart, mind, and soul, to that universal consciousness. And there is no way you can will yourself in through that doorway, but rather you just simply surrender yourself and say, not my will, but thy will, O Lord. And you empty yourself completely, and you open yourself to this vast universal consciousness without fear, without hesitation. You know that whatever happens to you is for your own highest good, and you feel as if you are a small child standing on the precipice of something tremendous within yourself. And if you can surrender yourself completely and thoroughly, giving up all thoughts of good and evil, you see, we can be completely attached to being good and being the good guy and doing what is right. And this is what Mother called saint consciousness. It is that one who is completely dedicated towards the one. And yet there is still this saint consciousness, there is still this duality. But to go through and go into universal consciousness is a step beyond that. And you let go of yourself as seeing yourself as being good or as evil. You just see nothing but oneness, nothing but oneness everywhere. And this can be very difficult because we have so entrenched ourselves in seeing ourselves as being against war, as being against negative things, as being against abuse and all the rest of it, and with good reason. And yet this limits the consciousness. And so we even have to let go of those ideas of what we conceive of as being good and evil. And we see that everything is working for the highest good of all. And we let go of our attachment to that. And once we do that, and we totally surrender ourselves to this infinite consciousness, then we can release ourselves of all thoughts of duality, all thoughts of separation, and we enter into this oneness. And when we do that, then we fulfill the highest aspect of evolution, and that is the return of consciousness from its great journey, coming out of the oneness of all consciousness, journeying through all time and millennia, through this material creation, through many different aspects of it, and finally rejoining that one infinite consciousness once again. And we realize the truth of it about our own beings. And we know that in truth there never has been any reality to the idea of separation. Only it has been an idea that's been fixed in our own consciousness that has come to make us believe that we are separate from the one infinite consciousness. And then we attain total freedom as a soul, and we know who and what we truly are in that infinite consciousness. And so this teaching is all about taking you to that highest and greatest consciousness, to accept that in your own being, and not just to think it intellectually, but to experience it, to know it, and to become that. But who is interested in this? You know, who wants to make the effort? Because it requires everything in us. Everything. but it does not require us necessarily to leave family or job or any of the rest of it. We can do it right where we're at, but that inner renunciation needs to happen. And so we need purity, body, mind, and soul. We should feed this body only things that are good for it. We should not introduce any stimulants into it or any depressants into it, because this nervous system becomes extremely refined through this process. And anything that we introduce into this nervous system has a consequence and can become an inhibitant towards the manifestation of that universal consciousness. So we are told that no smoking, no drinking, no drugs that are not prescription drugs. And so that this nervous system might undergo that refinement. Mother asked me to stop drinking at one time, and I was not for it. You know, I wanted just to have my own way with things. And I was also using some drugs at the time. And so I kind of fought her on this. But finally, she laid it out on the line for me, and she said, you can have sociability or you can have Christ consciousness. You choose. And so I decided to give it all up, and I have never, ever regretted that decision. That has been one of the most wonderful things, because I know my personality. And now I know much more about what happens to the nervous system. And I know that I could not have attained whatever it is that I have in this cosmic consciousness without having given those things up. And so also leading a life of purity. Now this does not mean becoming somebody who's boring. You know, somebody once asked me, what, am I supposed to become the church lady? I think it was a TV show comedy person who was the church lady and was very uptight and snooty and looked down on everybody else. This is not the stereotype. But this purity within you is in your heart. And you make that heart within something that is pure, something that is unattached to the things of the world. And it makes it yearning for God alone. And when you do things in the world, we all have to earn our living. Make it as a service towards God and each and every person. Whatever service that is, whatever thing that that's making, or whatever service that's providing for other people, make it something that's pure and wonderful and beautiful for God in each and every one of the forms that comes before you. And if you do this, you will know such great joy, such great love, such laughter, such peace. Because God invented humor too, you know. And he's not without humor. He's not without fun. But make the fun the purity within you. And if you do these things, then you will know freedom, true freedom. And you will know love, universal love. And you will know peace. When we think about how anxious we are in our bodies, how anxious we are in the worlds, what would it be to experience real, deep-seated peace? Heart, mind, and soul. To know that so thoroughly and to feel as if you're being held in the arms of the infinite beloved, totally protected. Totally cared for. And then to take that out and spread it everywhere you go. So this is what's possible within you. And yet just mere words can't convey the beauty and the wonder and the incredible awe of which you approach this inner consciousness. And it begins to open up for you. And you begin to see greater and greater possibilities. You know, God realization is not the end of life. It's really just the beginning, because God is infinite. God is universal. And this consciousness, when it gets relinked and reunioned with God, really just begins its journey in exploring God's great infinite body. And so the learning, the exploring, the adventure just continues on and on. But the difference is you have that full and complete knowledge of your oneness with that infinite consciousness. And whatever you do in perfect harmony with it. And so you are not any longer creating karma for yourself in a way that keeps you separated and bound and chained to this body and to this world. You might very well choose to continue to live in this world, but it is a conscious choice and not something that you have to do. So the journey and the exploration just really begins in earnest when you discover who and what you truly are. And it is not far away. It is not. It is as close as your next breath. And so this is the thing that we need to realize. I just want to say that I just see each of you as God shining. You know, I was thinking about saints and sages and God-realized individuals and what they're really like, and I thought of them as all being like stained glass windows. And the light just shining behind the stained glass. And each one has their own colors, their own set, pattern, but each one allows so much of that light to shine through, and that we have become smoky glass, you know, because of all the things that have kind of happened in our lives, and it's just made a layer over the top of the stained glass, so the light doesn't shine as brightly. But as we go to work on ourselves, and that all that gets rubbed off, that light just starts shining through more and more greatly. And what a beautiful creation each and every one of us are. All expressions of the divine. And that's all what the truth is about each of us. So, is there any questions, any thoughts, reflections on your practice?
I've been wondering. My mind seems to be disappearing. I'm not sure if this is a good thing, if it's a sign of lack of effort, or that it's all right, and I can't remember anything. Anymore.
Well, that can happen sometimes as a temporary state when you're going through stages of upliftment.
I don't know if I'm going through any stage of upliftment.
Okay. So that's not necessarily a feature that's going with it. It's just not being able to remember things or being conscious. Well, whether that's related to the meditation or not, it may be a product of something else that's going on in your life. Sometimes, you know, I know for myself that memory and things like that can be almost like a juggler. You take one thing, two things, three things, and fine, you know, be a fourth or fifth thing. You not only drop those things, but you drop everything else too. So sometimes it's that slowing down. It's being a little more intentional about what you're up to, what you're committing yourself to. And if there's a state of overcommitment in your life, and there's a way that the mind can just start checking out of that. And it's not even necessarily being aware that you've overcommitted, but on some level, you begin to withdraw from that. and one of the products of that is forgetfulness. It can be not quite being in your body. You can develop kind of a clumsiness. You drop things, have accidents, all of that. And that can be a product of just not being clearly centered in your body. So sometimes it's bringing the mind back in that way. Sometimes it can be a product of this upliftment that goes on, and you can feel that your mind just doesn't operate in quite the same way any longer. And what can be helpful then is focusing on the heart center versus the third eye point. And what I've found is that the heart center tends to balance and ground you in a way. You shouldn't focus down lower than that, but the heart center will do that for you. And practice just being more in tune with the body, in tune with your own world. If there's a way that circumstances has kind of driven you out of that, and you've been in a pretty high state of intense activity and lots of things going on in your life, and when that happens, it's almost as if a part of you can begin to withdraw from the total because it seems overwhelming and like it's too much. And so it's to come down to very prime simplicity. The Zen masters talk about this a lot. It's being very intentional, very focused, and it's just one thing at a time. It's just being very present to whatever it is that you're doing. The other may be just making lists and all the rest of it so that you have that information stored someplace other than in your brain. and then just recalling it as you need it and being mindful of that and trying to bring your awareness to it. But it takes a great deal of attention and focused attention on your mind to bring yourself back into that mindful awareness. Does it feel like a disassociated state at all, where you kind of don't feel quite connected? Just a memory kind of thing.
It's more like a sort of a peacefulness.
Uh-huh.
Nothing matters too much.
Oh. Well, that could be a sign of you're just stepping down from a very high anxiety kind of state, and that's how you're used to managing things. And when you move into more of a peaceful awareness, there's actually a negative or a shadow side to that that begins to withdraw from the activities of the world. And that's a little bit relates to what I was talking about, the bhava, or that false sense of peace or bliss that comes in. And the thing to do is to bring yourself back into the world, to bring that balance back in. But keep that peace. You don't have to enter back into that high state of anxiety to keep your world managed, but it becomes a razor line that you go along, where you keep the peace, but you also keep your focused awareness. And that's sometimes easier said than done, but to keep practice bringing yourself back to that, not to give in to that too much, because that can take you off in kind of a spaciness that isn't realization. It's a false peak, so to speak, on the path up towards God. So bring your mind constantly back and bring that balance back in. Challenge yourself that way. And it's a state that you'll move through and you'll come out of. I think I know what you're talking about now. Yeah.
Good.
And not sometimes people, when they're meditating, will go into a state that isn't true peace. It's almost an unconscious state. And you kind of come out of it, and you feel very peaceful and rested in a way. But that's not a true state of meditation. That, again, is a false state that comes on you. Full meditation should be full and conscious awareness of whatever it is that you're experiencing. And so that can, it's actually, from a meditation standpoint, it's a negative state because it takes you into more of an unconscious state of awareness. So what you want to do is bring yourself back into a conscious state of awareness. And that can feel like you're almost giving up something at first. It's very tempting to move into that. But bring yourself back and go through those obstacles. And then when you go into the pure consciousness, you will be very aware, you'll be very awake, you'll be very conscious of exactly what's going on with you. Yeah. There's many subtle states that come along here, and they act as temptations to pull you this side and that side. Yeah.
I do feel that when I've been meditating, it's very peaceful, very calm, very still, but it doesn't feel like infinite consciousness.
Right.
Like infinite restfulness.
Yeah. Well, if you're conscious and aware, you're all right. You know, you, like I said earlier, you can't make it happen. You just open yourself up to it happening. And when that, when your own desire nature brings you to that point, it'll happen automatically. But if you're falling into almost an unconscious state, almost a sleep type state, even though you're not in a sleep state, but it's almost an unconscious state, that's what I'm talking about there. And that can happen where a lot of time can pass for people and they're not aware of time passing. They're not even aware that they're not exactly sure where they've been. And that's the negative state. If you're just experiencing that peace, but you're fully aware and awake, that's fine. Just open yourself to that. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, I'm just trying to understand what the good stage is.
Right. If you're experiencing peace and you're fully alert, your mind...
Alert to make...
The state of peace.
Okay.
So you're alert in your ordinary way of thinking, your ordinary mind, only maybe thoughts have just become very still.
Very still, aware of the world around you too?
Could be aware of the world or not, but the main thing is your awareness is there. This negative state, your awareness begins to fade, and as I say, it's almost like going into a sleep state. Okay, but if you become more unconscious, so that's one of the criteria you want to look at. Are you staying conscious? Or are you going toward into this unconscious state? That's more similar to a sleep state. So if you're staying conscious, that's fine. You're on the right track. And if you're just experiencing a lot of peace, that's wonderful. Then you're getting the benefits. And that's a good thing, did you say?
No, but it's just...
Right.
I thought when you meditated, maybe that was what would be a good thing to happen. But it happened.
It is a good thing when it happens. But there again, you can't manufacture or will those things into being. So sometimes what's required is just that open awareness and that waiting, starting out with the intention that you want that full realization. That's what you're there for. And then, as I say, let it go and just stay in that peace. And sometimes what we're being taught there is just to wait in patience. Something that I think of as patient expectation. You're expectant, you're open, you're ready for something more to happen, but you're patient in that. You're not anxious about it. And that's a very good place to be in. That power of that peace will grow inside of you. And that can take you all the way to your God realization. So you can just stay with that presence of peace in you. Have it become more and more pervasive throughout your day, throughout your life. And that feeling can take you all the way.
I find that that feeling of peace gets kind of upset by things that happen in everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
And so very, like I can't maintain that feeling when other people are doing certain things. And
that's, you're on the battlefield of life. And it's one thing to think about is it's not the individuals or the circumstances outside of you that are creating the disparity, but rather it's your own inner attachment towards things being in a particular way, towards people acting in a particular way. And when there's a dissonance between our own inner attachment and the outer world, that's what creates the ruffles. That's what creates the lack of sense of peace. So that's where the work needs to happen, is not having the outward world change to satisfy us. That would be fine if that would happen, but that never happens. So the world is going to always be the nature of the world. The thing to do is to analyze where it is that you got caught. What assumptions did you make? What attachments did you have there? And can you work on letting go of those sense of attachments?
Well, I'm speaking especially of children.
Mm-hmm. They're our greatest teachers.
Yes. Not being attached to how they acted, but still having an idea of how it would be good how they acted,
right.
And encouraging them.
Sure, they still need to be trained and taught.
Not be attached to how you feel they should act.
Right, and it is a fine balance because you are there as a parent to train them, to teach them. If nobody does that, they will not learn it. And they've come to you, some with habit patterns they learn in this lifetime, but habit patterns they also bring over from other lifetimes. If you can hold the highest in them, see the light of God within them, and see whatever idiosyncrasies they're bringing with them as something that they've brought to you for you to help them to understand how to manifest light in a greater way in their life, then that, from that perspective, then that gives you the peace to interact with them and just be there consistently, persistently, always bringing them back, always bringing them back. But it doesn't need to disturb your own peace. This happens all the time in the world. Sometimes we'll interact with somebody and they will just get under our skin like crazy, you know, somehow they just bug us. And they're around somebody else and they go, really? They don't bother me at all. You know, it's one person can come in and be loud and boisterous and everything, and one person is just totally shocked and maybe afraid, you know, what's this person going to do? And somebody else will go, oh yeah, that's just how I grew up, that's great. You know, I love a good argument, you know. And so somebody else, oh, that's the worst thing in the world that could happen for me is to be in an argument. You know, we all have those varying shades of likes and dislikes. And because of that, we don't accept the fullness of life. So if we can let go of some of those attachments, it's not that we let go of our preferences or what we know to be the truth inside of ourselves, but we let go of our reaction to what's going on around us. We don't take it personally, but rather we see it as the play of life going on. And it doesn't mean we become less active in life, or it doesn't mean we become like vegetables, you know, with no thoughts of our own or what we want or anything else. We, in fact, if anything, we become more clear on that. But the key here is we become less reactive. Emotionally, we don't get hooked in the same way. And so we can be very powerful actors. When you look at the lives of these great saints and great avatars, Jesus getting angry in the temple and turning over tables and had whips and was whipping people out of there and was yelling and, you know, he was on a rampage. You know, he was acting very powerfully. But it wasn't an out of control. It was something that flowed through him rather than him reacting to what was going on around him. If you see the difference between those two. One is we lose control of our own feelings and our own thoughts. We are reacting to a situation that we're not fully conscious about. The other is we're fully conscious and we feel ourselves acting out internally what's congruent for us, what's deepest inside of us. So one, the outward world is controlling us. The other is we take our instructions directly from within and we move from that place. It's a very different quality between those two. One, we're free. We're acting as our own agent. The other is we're reacting to the world around us. So what that requires is letting go of needing to see this world be in a particular way, because that attachment is what grabs us. And it's from a limited point of view. When we act from our own soul's direction, then we bring to it the fullness of ourselves. It doesn't make us less of a person. In fact, it makes us more fully ourselves than ever before. So when you see your children, see them as manifestations of the divine, but in varying stages of development. And your job is to help them develop more and more to manifest that light within them. And if they hook you and they catch you, just try to inwardly take a step back. Take a deep breath. Remember who you are, and then remember who they really are. And it's just the fun of the play. Hold them lightly and hold yourself lightly. Doesn't mean that you can't act powerfully or strongly in the world. Sometimes you need to. But you can always hold it lightly. And if you can learn that, that's the self-mastery. If you can learn that, then you will have really achieved something. And children are wonderful teachers for that. If nobody else can get under our skin, they can. Because they know. They go right for it. They've learned to identify that in us. And when you feel, you know, you can tell something happens and you think, well, that should require a reactivity of on a scale of 1 to 10, a 2, you know, on the low end there. And what I'm feeling is a 9, you know. Okay. What's the difference between that 2 and that 9? It's us, you know, it's not them. And that's our, it's because of prior experiences that we had, emotional reactions we're having around it. And that has nothing to do with them. That's us.
It's action-reaction.
Yeah. So we're being, and one thing to think about it, tell the ego, you know, that just means the world's controlling us. The ego doesn't like to be controlled, so you're speaking to its own best interest. You know, you're losing control.
Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, I had an experience in May.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a month and a half ago, and I had a really difficult time when I came back to get back into society.
Mm-hmm.
I've been out three other times for longer.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a real struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And the only, well, I know what the difference was, is I meditated
mm-hmm.
when I was out there.
Yeah.
And I would find we had several different campsites, and I found in each campsite I would find a place that felt like walk the beach and find a spot.
Mm-hmm.
I'd use that spot. It was near the end of the trip we haven't had a 10-day trip, but it was near the end of the trip. And I found that's the last campsite. And I found a place, and I was there for 3 mornings. And three mornings meditation
that mm-hmm.
And one of the times there, I had an experience of just make it short, just being one with nature.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the place I'd when I came back into civilization.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I would go.
Yeah.
I wanted to go back mm-hmm. there and desperately go back there.
Mm-hmm.
I had a real struggle for at least 3 or 4 days. I would just sit. I would not even sitting, I'd just be doing something and all of a sudden go,
yeah.
I'd go right back to that.
Yeah. You can see why these yogis could just establish a cave someplace and never leave it.
Uh-huh.
You know, just a tremendous sense of oneness and peace and consciousness that comes with that. And it's anytime you have a change of circumstances. I knew a woman from India who grew up in a large city there and lots of neighbors and lots of activity. She cannot conceive of people living out in the woods or more isolated, even on farms and things like that. That just seems like the most horrific thing she could think of, because she's so used to closely condensed people, you know, and that's what's comfortable for her, and she loves that. And so a lot of it is what the mind becomes accustomed to and used to. When you go through a change of circumstance like that, your mental and psychic guard comes down. And the wonder of that is that you reach out and you can experience this great oneness with nature and with the universal life around you. When you come back to where there's more people and more activity, more noise, all of that, you should prepare yourself because you need those protections around you. Now, this doesn't mean that you need to give up on the peace or the consciousness that you found around you, but you need to protect yourself in order to be around where there's more variety of energy coming at you from different people, sounds, vibration, everything. And so if you were to come from that very quiet space and suddenly be transported in the middle of a city, the amount of vibrations there would just bombard you, and it would be a terrible shock to your system. Whereas somebody who regularly lives in the city, they are accustomed to that. And so they don't get shocked in the same way. So we need to prepare ourselves when we do that. It's nice if you can do it gradually, but one of the ways you can do it is by imagining yourself being back where there's more activity, where there's more people, where there's more jostle, as you're preparing to come back. And you gradually assume the psychic armor, you might say, of being in situations where you don't have that complete peace, where that nature isn't just there for you in that way. And that's all right. It's not a good or bad kind of a thing. It's just simply what you need to do. But within that psychic protection, you can carry your peace with you. as you grow in consciousness and you achieve, because that's still in the state of duality, as you grow in consciousness and you become more and more in tune with that oneness, you're able to more freely mix in and out of company with that. It used to be terrifically painful for me to be in large groups. And I was telling Mother about this one time, and she says, well, how are you going to be a minister if that's the case? And I said, great question, I have no idea. Being around people was painful for me. It is a stage that I was going through, it lasted for several years, of just psychically being open to the world and being people and vibration and all the rest of it. And I could only endure it for very limited times. Now I experience it differently. I see the one life operating in all. And it doesn't affect me in the same way that it once did. It doesn't drain me. It doesn't wear me out. I don't think that I could, at this point in my life, live as Swami Ramdas did. He was constantly surrounded by people. And it may be that I just have a different nature around that, and that won't ever be the thing that I'll like. But, you know, so I need a certain amount of time for myself and to have that experience also. But it's different for me now around people. And just the terrific sense of love that I feel for people that just spontaneously flows from me. And it's not a matter of feeling shocked very much by people. There are still some circumstances I prefer not to be around. You know, bar settings and loud music and things like that are just not my cup of tea. And so those are things I prefer, but it's much easier for me to be around a greater kind of range of experiences. So when your body, your psychic body opens like that, at least initially you need to protect yourself. You can see yourself surrounded in light all around you. You can use various visual images. Sometimes you can imagine a plexiglass bubble around you, and sometimes that's helpful. Whatever you need to do to protect you on that more subtle level will be a good thing. You can just imagine yourself being back there and noise of television or children or demands of work and all the rest of it. Your unconscious knows what to do, and it'll just automatically start constructing that bubble. The difference is you can bring that peace with you within that.
Mm-hmm. I get captured right there.
Mm-hmm.
The strongest was for me. I felt really spaced.
Mm-hmm.
Like not here.
Right.
All the way traveling, all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
It got stronger as we got into Courtney from the AF Island. But it was more. I wanted to just. I didn't want to have any responsibilities.
Yeah.
I didn't want. I just wanted to go back to that place, because when you're out there, you're your own.
Right.
You're responsible for yourself.
Right.
For your food, for your protection, for everything.
When Sri Yukteswar gave the Samadhi experience to Yogananda, and he had this tremendous release into this cosmic consciousness, and entering back in, the first thing he did is he handed him a broom and he says, let's sweep the balcony. You know, that balance of life, you know. And as you get more accustomed to moving back and forth, and you see that, you know, your duties in the world draw something from you, but they also give something to you. And when you see the exchange that comes from that, and you see God within that, then you'll experience less and less of that kind of duality about it. And your play becomes your work, and your work becomes your play, and they become so intermixed, it's hard to tell the difference sometimes. So while that's a natural thing, look to see God in those responsibilities. Look to see God in that life too, because that's there, and it gives something to you and allows you to give something to the world in addition.
I've shared this experience with Phyllis. I've shared it with administrator with Catherine, but I haven't totally... I should explain another part to this. It was 2 days before I had this experience that I was in a cave. And the cave was, it was a burial cave for West Coast Indians. Three of us went in there, and there was lots of bones, and there was lots of skulls and everything, paraphernalia that they used to have. The other two guys, I went to get my camera, and anyway, short story, I went to get my camera, came back, and they were already out of there. I went in first, there's two sections, the first cave, second cave. I went further in and to go inside, and I was in there, and as I went in, I said a little prayer for the people who were there, and for their whatever, for their one, you know, just to acknowledge, and I went into the second cave, and I just sat there, and I heard this voice, and the voice said, "You are," and that was it. And then that was the afternoon, and two days later in the morning, that's when I felt. And the first thing that came to my mind was, "You are one." And it's the first part is, it's not haunting, but it's that sort of we talked about this before, the astral planes. So I don't know quite how to put these two together. I realized that out there, experiences and being one with nature is the total life of the West Coast Indians. They were very in tune with that. So I have this experience that I come from.
I'm curious about that, David. Many people in this island are interested in the native ways, and they talk a lot about having experiences with, they call them the ancestors, and how this guides them, and how this is a very beneficial thing in their life. And I don't really know what all that is that they're talking about.
Well, there's certainly means and access for getting some awareness of consciousness that has passed beyond, so that those individuals that have left this body moved into the astral realms, that if you focus your attention on them, you can get some access to that. However, there's no guarantee that what you're going to get is very high quality responses. Some people were, you know, kind of naughty and pills when they were here on Earth, and the astral world doesn't necessarily change any of that. So, you know, the thing is that when you have that purity and that perfection inside of you, that all consciousness right inside of you, why would you look to access someone or something that is less than that purity of that one consciousness? So what has always been taught to me, and what I value most, is gaining access to that highest consciousness, and that there are a lot of in-between states that people can attain to. Some people assume just because somebody has left this body that there is something greater that they have to offer. But that's not necessarily so at all. So it's one means of trying to access some consciousness, some state of awareness beyond this material plane. It also is not spiritually beneficial to the individual, particularly if you're talking about channeling that spirit through you. Because what happens is that your own consciousness leaves your body and this other consciousness comes in. And when that happens, it weakens your own will and therefore retards your own progress. And a true master would never replace an individual in their own body. You might experience the consciousness, you might feel the touch of their consciousness on yours, and therefore have an experience like that, but that's far different than your own consciousness leaving and another consciousness coming through and manifesting. So it would be like if one of your children were having difficulty in kindergarten, and you said, well, let me go for you today. I'll go and I'll be in kindergarten today. And you just stay home. Okay? It doesn't help you, and it doesn't help your child. Now, if you went with your child and said, why don't we go today, and I'll stay with you through part of the day until you start getting more comfortable and you're okay, that's a very different story.
Well, I can see what you're saying about that not being very beneficial for the person who's getting channeled through, but are you saying that what the words that are coming channeled through, that there's quite a few books around these days that are channeled,
mm-hmm.
that what is being said in those books probably is not terribly useful?
It can be a very mixed story. One of the things that you'll notice is that they all, almost uniformly, all the channel books say that there's no such thing as karma. That's very convenient for the ego. And the ego loves to see that there's no consequences for the actions. And, you know, an example is Seth, who operated through Jane Roberts. She normally didn't smoke, she didn't drink. Seth came in and he smoked and drank in her body. And he says, well, I've always told them there's good things about this worldly consciousness. And told who? You know, he's like a runaway spirit. You know, he has some consciousness, some awareness beyond this material plane, but it's far from the highest. He has some knowledge about the mechanisms that make this material consciousness work, but he's not teaching the highest state of awareness. Far from it.
I wasn't searching that out. It came.
Mm-hmm.
And how do I take it? How do I do with that?
If it's uplifting to your consciousness, and it sounds as if from that a wonderful thing came. Now, you don't know whether that came from one of these departed spirits or whether it was your own self talking to you. But look at the purity of the message, which is essentially, in the Old Testament language, I am that I am. And that is a high state of consciousness. And that's the way that you took it.
So you're saying, the words you are could be I am what I am.
Mm-hmm. Because we're so used to being separate, sometimes the way the words get translated into the mind. But it's about your purity of existence and led to that further experience. It's not necessarily coming from a departed spirit at all. Because of your own progress that you've been making, that's something, that's an experience generated inside of you. So that was a genuine spiritual experience, not a psychic one. Sometimes when we hear that highest consciousness speaking to us, sometimes it can sound like very strong mental language coming to us. Sometimes it can even sound like a voice outside of us, although that's rare. Sometimes it comes through an experience that our whole being resonates with it. Those are the most powerful kind. But we can get it through a variety of different ways. Sometimes we read something in a book and we just know more strongly than just an intellectual notion. We know intuitively that that's the truth when we hear it. So there's a variety of ways that the consciousness reveals itself to us. Mm-hmm.
There was something I was very puzzled about. This experience of being one with nature. One time somebody said that she was going to give me this experience, and we went for a walk in the woods and had that experience of being one with nature. And I was wondering how that person could do that.
Be one with nature?
Could give me that experience of being one with nature. How they do that.
Well, if you're open and ready, when you get near someone who's having a higher nature experience, that can rub off. And it can give you a temporary glimpse into a greater world. Or it can set your soul on fire and start something that'll just become a conflagration through your whole soul. So that's the great value of what's called satsang, association with truth, or association with saints or God-realized individuals.
Now, this person did not seem like a God-realized person.
That's very possible. There are people of very mixed...
question.
Well, there are people of very mixed nature, but occasionally they have some uplifting experience happen to them. And it can be a true and legitimate experience, even though they themselves are maybe not all that they should be. And that's God's grace coming in and just showing that individual, and perhaps you, because you shared in it to some extent, the possibility of what can happen when you put your mind in the right way. So it's a bit of grace to lift that individual up at that time and say, listen, wake up, look at what's possible. Yeah.
Many of us in this room have had trouble with this person, with the, like, it didn't fit together.
Well, that happens, and then when people come back down into normal state of consciousness, they don't deal with it right, and they don't treat it well at all, or people around them. It doesn't invalidate that experience. They may have had a true and legitimate experience, but it didn't work to transform them as human beings. And that's where experiences can be very limited. Sometimes you can have an experience, but it doesn't mean that you yourself have gone through the necessary transformation to be able to maintain and fully carry that consciousness with you.